One of our church activities that's going to begin, I believe, this month in Malaysia, they're starting a one-day youth seminar. And a lot of inspiration there. They have an outline for a day-long activity presenting a number of topics, which Arvind Raj and Sivaneshwaran are instrumental in taking back the idea from their six-month task force program here and pushing it through the COM there and bringing it all to manifestation. So we're very happy to see that, and there's certainly lots of youth in Malaysia that will benefit from being exposed to Gurudeva's teachings. So one of the sections in that seminar is on karma, and I've been thinking about karma a lot recently, because when I'm asked questions about karma, the questions are so far off the mark, you know, as to what they should be. And so I was wondering, what's going on here? What is missing? So, of course, from just individuals who aren't familiar at all with our teachings, you get the common stereotypes such as, well, what's the point of trying anyway? You know, it's all in my karma. No matter what I do, it's going to work out the same way. So why bother? You get that one quite often. Which, of course, is a total misunderstanding. But even when understanding exists, you know, such as from reading Merging with Shiva and Gurudeva's other writings on karma, you know, karma is the law of cause and effect. And we know, of course, the three kinds of karma. We can rattle them off, sanchita, prabdha, and kriyamana, and, you know, we understand. That isn't enough. You know, just understanding correctly what karma is isn't the final goal here. We need to take this understanding and apply it to our life in a way which changes our life so that we refine the way we act and react to life. So, I have a story to begin. I have a new writer and he likes stories, so a new story for you. It's about a story about loaning a car. So, a family loaned its one car to a neighbor for the day as the neighbor's car wasn't working. Then unexpectedly, late in the morning, the family needed a car to go to town for an unexpected and important errand. At the very moment, the mother said to her son, "We need to go to town right away," the son heard a car pulling in their driveway, looked out the window, and turned to the mother and said, "Our karma." Yeah, our karma. So, so it was both their car, of course, and it was their karma that they had done a generous act. And so in their moment of need, their car came back, our karma. So anyway, another story. Trying to get an overview on the understanding of karma is also important, because sometimes we understand it, but we get an underview. We understand it kind of from a bottom-up point of view. We're looking at it, but we don't really see it in its totality. So this is this little story to comparison, actually, to try and give us a sense of looking at it from the top down. So if we imagine a kingdom, say a Hindu kingdom existing some 2,000 years ago when kingdoms were common, the kingdom, of course, had laws and governing misbehavior such as murder, theft, and so forth. And when a citizen broke the law, he was punished by the king, of course. Likewise, the king rewards those who perform outstanding service to the kingdom. So in that situation, the king is very busy punishing and rewarding according to the law and according to standards of behavior those who live in the kingdom. So it all goes along very well. So if we imagine that the king is God Shiva and his laws are initially unwritten, of course, because the king is invisible and his laws are invisible, but eventually they're written down in scripture. Wise men figure out the laws that govern life and they write them down for us and they're passed on from one generation to the next. So we end up with the laws of conduct, virtuous conduct, non-virtuous conduct, definitions of dharma and adharma. So we've got the laws, but how do the laws get enforced? The king's invisible. God is invisible. So he's not around to enforce them. So that's where karma comes in. Karma is the system of justice that's built into life. It's automatic. It's like a computer program. God Shiva doesn't have to watch everything that happens and reward and punish. No, he's put a program, a computer program into effect so that an action creates a reaction. A cause creates an effect. So it's a system of justice that's built right into life. Invisible system. So, justice is known for moving very slowly, right? You know, it takes a number of years before a criminal receives his punishment, say in the U.S. It might take 5, even 10 years before the punishment actually is received. However, the law of karma is even slower. It can take many lifetimes before the reward or punishment comes back. So consequently, you get a large backlog of rewards and punishments, right? Because we're acting all the time, but the reaction, the effect doesn't come back to us except over a long period of time. So the karma we bring into a life are the rewards and punishments from our past actions we have yet to receive. They're pending. They're coming, but it's a slow process. So our own past actions are creating this backlog of rewards and punishments, which we carry from one life to another and constitutes our karma. A few years ago, I had the pleasure of co-conducting a lecture with Jagadisan, a very fine religious person from Malaysia who's a leader in the Sai Baba movement there. So I got to go first and give my talk, which was on enlightenment. It's pointing out the process of enlightenment and how we don't sit there totally unenlightened and then one day lightning flashes and we become enlightened. No, it doesn't work like that. It's not like the storybook idea of enlightenment that we go from total ignorance to total enlightenment in a split second. It's a gradual process. And I went through the whole explanation of the different ways we realize God gradually, starting with Gurudeva's favorite, which is look into the other person's eyes, see the light. What are you seeing? You're seeing God. Everyone can see God. You know, so I started there and was going through and went through everything. And then it's Jagadisan's turn. And he's a very charismatic speaker and he was talking and acknowledging what I'd said. And one of the points he made is that, you know, unfortunately today, Hindus don't pay that much attention to the traditional wisdom given by the Swamis. But this wisdom gets repackaged into secular self-improvement seminars based upon Hindu principles, and Hindus go to them and pay thousands of dollars. But isn't this a strange phenomena that the teachings are free, given by the Swamis, but someone, rather than going and listening and understanding, will pay thousands of dollars to go to a self-improvement seminar based upon just a few of the principles. So I took that into account. So I've created a self-improvement seminar, so to speak, on karma. And it's called You know, you've heard of stress management workshops. This is called a karma management workshop. Karma management workshop. So this is part one of our karma management workshop, which you have to come back next Sun 1 for part two. So, you know, like the seven habits of highly effective people and so on, they make a list of all these points. Like the first habit, of course, is be proactive, right? So we've got our principles here. Our first principle is we have to take responsibility. Okay? Take responsibility. So, karma manifests through other people. We're just not sitting there and a rock falls on our head. Usually someone does something to us. There's another person involved. And therefore, it's easy to blame it on the other person. For example, we're hit by a car and our leg is broken. So, natural response is, well, we're upset with the driver, right? Who hit us? We're really mad. This person broke my leg, you know, through carelessness. I'm really upset with that person. So, that's not taking responsibility. We're blaming the other person. Saying that person made a mistake. I did perfectly well, and that person made a mistake, and so forth and so on. So, the correct perspective is to see yourself as responsible for whatever happens to you. Take responsibility. You caused yourself to be hit by a car and to end up with a broken leg. You caused yourself to experience that. The other person was simply the instrument for your karma. How many times do we really look at it that way? Probably not as often as we should. You know, it's so easy to blame the other person for doing something wrong and to see us as perfect, but no, that misses the point. We have to take responsibility for everything that happens to us. Gurudeva has a nice statement in this regard. As long as we externalize the source of our success and failures, we perpetuate the cycles of karma, good and bad. There is no one out there making it all happen. Our actions, thoughts, and attitudes make it all happen. So, human nature, of course, it's always easy to take responsibility when things go well, right? A few $1,000 extra comes in somehow, and you say, boy, you know, what good karma. This is great. What did I do in my past life to earn this, you know, and you're so happy, but then you lose $2,000 unexpectedly and you start to blame someone. You say, boy, that person sure gave me bad advice. So somehow we're more willing to take, shall we say, responsibility for things that go well than for things that don't go well. So, of course, the Tirukkural has a comment on that. It says, why should those who rejoice when destiny brings them good moan when that same destiny decrees misfortune? Because it's human nature. But, of course, the wise point of view is take responsibility. No matter if something goes well or something goes poorly, no matter who is the instrument to return your karma to you, realize that it's your karma that's coming to you. It has nothing to do with the person that's there. It's your karma. Everything you face is your karma. So take responsibility. That's our first principle. Okay? Ready for our second principle? Second principle. Forgive the offender. Okay? We have a story here. A schoolboy, teenage schoolboy, on the way home from school, runs into a gang. And the boy is somehow different, the way he dresses or looks. And so the gang teases him for being different and then beats him up. Okay. Leaves him there. So the boy, of course, has the common reaction of being upset with the gang. He's not only upset this week. He's upset this month. He's upset this year. He's upset next year. In fact, he's never going to forget that this gang beat him up on this day. That's a normal reaction, right? You just cling to something like that, and you're really upset with the people that do it. So Gurudeva often told the story of Swami Sivananda. Most of us remember that story. It goes something like this. Swami Sivananda was at his ashram in Rishikesh, and some man comes up to him and starts beating him up, just out of nowhere. And so Swami's disciples manage to grab hold of the man, and not only that, they throw him in the local jail. So the next day, Swami Sivananda, garland in hand, goes to the jail, garlands the person, and thanks the person. He says, "Thank you so much for returning this karma to me. It's now gone. I'm no longer carrying it, and I'm so happy to be free from this karma. Thank you so much for being the instrument to bring this karma back to me." Isn't that a wise point of view? But how often do we not forgive the offender? We're missing the point, right? We're compounding the situation instead of looking at it, that it's an action coming back to us, and focusing on the action and being happy to receive it, because it's one less karmic burden. We get upset with the person who expresses it. We're so upset we're not going to forgive them. We're going to be mad at them forever, because they did that to us. Tirukkural says, "Forget anger toward all who have offended you, for it gives rise to teeming troubles." One of the troubles is it just keeps the mind disturbed, particularly when you start building these up, because it never happens just once, right? It happens when we're 10 years old, and it happens when we're 15 years old, and then 20 and 22 and so forth. It's happened to us 10, 20 times, right? And we can remember every single time, and it's still swirling around in our subconscious, disturbing us, making it difficult to meditate, difficult to concentrate. We're certainly not at peace. Why? Because we have not forgiven the offender. So when we're able to look at it as our karma and we're happy to receive it, we don't pay any attention to the offender. Or in Swami Sivananda's case, we thank the offender. We're so understanding of the process that we're happy to have it happen. Ready for the third principle? Okay. Don't retaliate. There's no need for us to be the instrument to return the karmic reaction to someone else. For example, someone is nasty to us. So, of course, we have to be nasty back, right? And then because we were nasty to them, they're nasty to us again, right? And because they were nasty to us, we feel obligated to be nasty to them. This could go on forever, right? So you get stuck in these cycles that are endless. But the wise approach is to say, okay, that person's being nasty. Kind of just step back, let the nastiness go by, and let it come around and go back to them by itself. You don't need to be the one to be the instrument to return it to them. It's going to go back to them through the law of karma. So the human response is to feel, well, they were nasty to me, therefore they deserved to have someone nasty to them, and I'm going to be the one to return it to them. That's the human response. But that's not the wise response. The wise response is, it's going to go back to them through the law of karma. I don't need to be involved, because if I give it back to them, then it'll come back to me. Let's just let karma take care of it. So it's like the classic cowboy movie. In the cowboy movies, they're always pursuing revenge. You know, it's like, for example, a robbery. So there's a robbery that happens, and there's two brothers, and the robber takes the money but shoots one of the brothers, kills him. So what happens the rest of the movie? Of course, the other brother chases down the murderer and kills him, right? That's all you see. But what's the karma, of course? The brother has no right to kill someone. he's not free from the karma of killing someone just because that person killed his brother. So, the next movie would be the opposite, right? He would get killed. And then probably his brother would spend the rest of the movie going around and kill the robber. Then the next movie would be the same again, right? It goes on forever. So, of course, it shows the problem of retaliating. If you personally retaliate, you get stuck in the cycle of karma yourself, which is an endless cycle. You're just stuck and repeating and repeating. So let someone else take care of it. And in this case, a cowboy analogy, let the sheriff do it. You know, the sheriff is taking an oath, right? He's upholding the laws. So, of course, he tries to capture the person. And if in trying to capture the person gets killed, the sheriff has no karma for killing the person, because that's, he's taken an oath. He's upholding the law. So, as long as he tries not to kill the person, but if he ends up having to kill the person, he's okay. There's no karma involved. So we've ended the cycle of karma. The brother got killed. The sheriff goes and catches the killer. It doesn't keep going and going and going into future episodes here. It's just one movie, one time. Carol, if you return kindness for injuries received and forget both, those who harmed you will be punished by their own shame. So that's really wise. You know, not only do you not injure back, you return it with a kindness. And then you forget the whole thing. That's a really high-minded approach. Okay, ready for our fourth principle. Fourth principle is consider the consequences. Often, our actions are based upon an emotional reaction to what someone else has done. And we haven't really thought through clearly the consequences of what we're doing. We're responding. But we're responding more with our heart, more with our emotions than with our head. And consequently, we don't always respond in a wise way. So Gurudeva gives us some good advice in this regard. He says, it is our reaction to karmas through lack of understanding that create most karmas we shall experience at a future time. Let's look at that again. It is our reaction to karmas through lack of understanding. So something happens to us and we don't take the time to understand it. We respond to it without clearly understanding what happened to us or what are the consequences of our response. Jirakaral has some good wisdom in this regard. As a man's shadow follows his footsteps wherever he goes, even so will destruction pursue those who commit sinful deeds. All suffering recoils on the wrongdoer himself. Thus those desiring not to suffer refrain from causing others pain. So there's a wonderful letter from Lord Ganesha in the Loving Ganesha book that starts out, keep track of your paces, for your walk makes marks. Each mark is a reward or a stumbling block. So everything we do makes a mark, meaning creates a karma, and that karma is either positive or negative. If it's positive here, it's called a reward. If it's negative, it's a stumbling block. So, therefore, the wise person thinks carefully about the consequences of all actions. and avoids reacting, acting upon an emotional response, but thinks through clearly an action to make sure, what is the karma that I'm creating here? Is it a reward or is it a stumbling block?